Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Alrighty, everybody, welcome back to A Change in Attitude here. I am, of course, the Texas Gentleman, Tanner Pruitt, and joined with me, my good friends, Ori and Mags. Ori and Mags, how are y'all doing today?
Hello, I am good. I am hoping this thunder and lightning outside my window calms down so we don't have any more of that through the recording, but if you do, you know why.
Thunderbolts and lightning, very, very frightening me.
Okay, enough of that.
Hi, good Tanner.
Yeah, I was right on the keys here, my imaginary keyboard here at the table. No, I'm always down for some special effects, with the thunder and the lightning. That'd be cool. Mags, how are you doing over in jolly old England?
Yeah, I'm really good. Just had the pleasure of chatting with Spencer on Love Wrestling, and now glad to be reviewing Monday Night Raw.
Well, good deal. I'm ready to review. I know you guys are ready to review. So let's get into this thing. Last time we spoke, we were talking about King of the Ring 1996. Stone Cold Steve Austin won the King of the Ring that year. He, of course, cut the infamous Austin 316 promo. We also had a match that was spectacular, in my opinion. British Bulldog challenging Shawn Michaels for the championship unsuccessfully, but still we got a very good match out of it. And I may have also caused a little bit of controversy. I said that I slept during the during the Undertaker and Mankind match. Mm-hmm. And the gravity of that is not lost on me. So I want to take a moment to apologize to absolutely nobody. I'm not going to apologize for falling asleep during that match because it was boring.
The thunder and lightning outside my house. Undertaker is dead. It's on my side. He's with me. Screw you, Tanner.
And give me. Tanner pulling a Conor McGregor. Wow.
I felt it was only appropriate. So if you want to send me hate mail, you can go ahead and at me on Twitter at Conor McCabe, spelled with a K. And you can just drop me your hate mail right there. Speaking of Conor McGregor, no, don't at Conor McCabe. I promise it's not a good situation. Don't do that. don't at Connor. He's a good guy.
He if you add him, leave us out of it. I don't want to die.
Don't get him involved in this. There's no reason. He didn't do anything wrong. So Monday Night Raw, June 24th, 1996. We are live once again from Green Bay, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Lots of cheeseheads in the arena. Tell me, guys, this really kind of old school Raw from nearly, 25 years ago. Started with Ahmed Johnson in a one-on-one contest against Hunter Hearst Helmsley. Ahmed Johnson ended up winning the match with the sit-out powerbomb, the Pearl River Plunge. I've got some notes here about Vince McMahon being very excited about Ahmed Johnson, mostly because he's a very large man. we also got preview segments for the show that I thought was very interesting. Normally with the modern Raws, we do tend to kind of just get like, hey, you know, here's the opening segment, and then you get like other stuff afterwards. So this was a little bit of a culture shock here. Ori, because this is all, I take it that this is the first time that you've seen this episode of Raw, correct?
That would be correct.
So talk to me about the vibe. What are you feeling with this opening segment here?
So let me just throw this out here, because I had to go through Peacock and search Raw and start scrolling back and looking at the years and the seasons. Oof. So if you are going back to watch this and follow along with us, this is going to be season 4, episode 25. That's where we are, just making it a little bit easier for everybody else. Now, in regards to the show, I too was shocked to see a 1 hour show, because I'm not used to seeing any WWF or WWE product that isn't at least 2 hours long. And for me, watching through the whole thing, even though it's edited and there's no station commercials, I'll put it that way, because there were other commercials like WWE does and produces nowadays, which to some degree I was surprised to see, and to some degree I wasn't. Vince trying to get in on that, you know, promotional money early. But it still felt like a 2 hour Raw in some respects. Like, I got to the end of it, I was like, 49 minutes? Like, have I really only been here for 49? I mean, for Pete's sake, Ahmed Johnson and Triple H, excuse me, Hunter Hearst Helmsley, it felt long. It felt like the match that would never end. It was 12 minutes long. It was the first 12 minutes of the entire show. Like, we never get 12-minute matches at the top of the show anymore. I can't remember. Now, that being said, let me just put a giant disclaimer on that. I haven't really watched anything WWE probably in the last 2 years, close to. But we don't get 12-minute matches, or it's so rare. Especially the night after a pay-per-view. So it was very weird to see. And like, my other note from this match was Helmsley looks small. I mean, granted, this was pre the whole steroid debacle and whatnot. Pre-game.
Pre-game.
Yeah, pre-everything. And like, and I've seen him live. I've seen him at a house show here in Baton Rouge. And
He's a large man. He's a very big guy.
Yeah, he's a pretty big dude. But, like, he legit looked small to me. And then, of course, we had this whole thing mid-match with Goldust and Marlena. Like, and I still don't get her freaking purpose. She's supposed to stand there in a gold dress looking intimidating, smoking a cigar. She never says anything. Like, I don't get her whole... I don't get the reasoning. Is she just there to be another pretty face because, like, she has something over Vince, or Vince has something over her, or what the heck is going on here, you know? I don't know.
I mean, you're raising a lot of very valid points, and I'm going to throw it to Mags to help try and maybe... I don't know, further plunge into these points that you raise and these concerns, because this did, while it was like a great nostalgic moment and being like, oh, that's cool, where they're giving you all the previews right at the top of the show, and they're telling you exactly what's going to happen segment by segment, it did felt a bit like a cluster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It felt like I think Ori hit the nail on the head. There was 2 hours worth of content crammed into an hour. And it was interesting for me, this match, we get Triple H, who is now the almost the second in command of the whole company, and he's getting the jobber's entrance. He's already in the ring when the show starts. Obviously, this is still kind of his punishment from the whole curtain call stuff that happened a few weeks previous. Obviously, we spoke about last week how he was pegged to win that King of the Ring, but as part of the punishment, he had it delayed a year. And I think that losing this match was also kind of like his way of clawing himself back into Vince's good books. But for me, the show, it just felt dingy. Like the crowd wasn't lit. The camera angles didn't have the production that we have nowadays. It felt it almost felt like an indie show, like when you watch a Fight TV style indie show, but obviously with big name wrestlers, WWF superstars. But yeah, I already hit the nail on the head. This match felt so long, and the fact that it took up a quarter of the whole kind of runtime, I think it was to show that Ahmed Johnson was going to be a fighting champion, but also kind of make Triple H, instead of being buried as the first person who faced the new champion, he got a lot of his own action in, he got a lot of his own moves in, so he would look like a potential future contender for that title, and we know that eventually does end up happening. But yeah, it just seemed very, very long. Then we get the picture-in-picture, which Ori mentioned, of Goldust and Marlena. And looking back into Marlena's past, she actually was Dustin's wife.
Yes.
And she actually got her start in wrestling. She was a makeup artist in WCW. And then she was asked if she wanted to be basically an extra on the show, and that built to her being I think it was Alexandra York, and she had the York Foundation, which was like a little stable of wrestlers. I think Matt Rotunda was part of that group when he was VK Wall Street or whatever it was called. So when Goldust came over to the WWF with her being married to him, she followed over, and it was kind of like jobs for the boys almost. They were he was related, so can you find somewhere for my wife to be involved? And it ended up being that. But I did like the kind of tease from Goldust that he was moving on from this Intercontinental title match into to the Undertaker one, who he'd had issues with before. I thought that was a cool little kind of like push to the next storyline, which we'd see later on in the show. And I also enjoyed the bit where Ahmed Johnson was able to talk to the fans for a little bit. He called Doc Hendricks Mark, which a little bit peeking behind the curtain there. But the way he was saying he was the first African American champion, and then I'm not bothered about that. I'm more bothered about being like the people's champion. I wonder if that's inspiration where we get that. A little later on down the line from a certain bigger star wrestler. But yeah, the match just felt plodding to me. It could have shaved 5 minutes off for me, and it would have felt like a much better match.
I agree. I think it was a good match overall, and it was a great promo, but it just, they both came out looking really good, but it was just way too friggin' long.
Yeah, I mean, I can't disagree with anything either of y'all have said about the match itself. I will initiate a little bit of a game, a little bit of a fun segment here as we go along through the episode. Monday Night Highlights. Yes, we will each take a turn naming our favorite part of each segment here. With this match here being the opening contest, Ahmed Johnson facing Hunter Hearst Helmsley. What was your favorite part of the match, Ori?
Wow, on the spot.
Oh god. Holy crap. I don't.
You can say that you don't have a favorite. I mean, that's really perfectly acceptable.
I was glad when it was finally over.
The end.
Yeah, like I thought it before Mag said it. Like, can my favorite part be when it was finally over?
Can this thing be done?
Yes. Right. Like, it was just way too long.
Good deal. Good deal. I can fully accept that this match was very, very long. One could argue unnecessarily long. Mags, your Monday night highlight.
Yeah, I've got to agree with Ori that there's not a lot that stands out as something that I would say is a favorite. One little kind of nuance I did pick up on, and I suppose I can put it forward as my favorite, was Ahmed held the title upside down every single time he lifted it up in the air, and it really, really annoyed me, and I don't know why. I think it's because that's my favorite wrestling belt ever. I have a lot of love for the Intercontinental belt. Not so much on that gold strap, which in like 1080p looks like it was hand sprayed with a kind of a car aerosol paint. But yeah, it was annoying that he kept holding it upside down. So that'll be my highlight, low light of the segment.
We'll switch it up. It doesn't. So for Monday night highlights, we'll say it doesn't have to be your favorite segment. Maybe most notable part of the segment. Let's say
there
that.
We go.
I think that's the end was the most notable part of the segment.
Yes.
The belt being hung upside down, most notable part of the segment. My Monday night highlight for this particular segment here was Vince McMahon shouting, "What a maneuver!"
Oh, that was brilliant. And it was only a baseball slide.
It was a baseball slide. And I was like, oh my God, yes, what a high spot that was, the baseball slide.
That's a good shout. That is a good shout.
But I mean, Vince always has this way of making something out of nothing. And I think that's kind of the whole gist of the WWE in its form. He made something out of nothing. And, you can't love him or hate him, you know, as a person, as a character, whatever. Like, you got to give him his props. He made something out of nothing and made it freaking work.
Yeah, give the devil his due. I got excited about that baseball slide. I don't know if anybody else did, but
I don't even remember it.
It was a maneuver, that is for sure.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey folks, PC Tony here. Thanks to our new partnership with Angry Lemonade, you can save 10% on physical products and digital commissions using the promo code CHAIRSHOT. Head to angrylemonade.net to check out their amazing catalog of products and services. Use the promo code CHAIRSHOT to save 10%. That's angrylemonade.net.
Are you looking for the newest and hottest in the world of pro wrestling? Then check out the amazing action on Powerslam.tv, the biggest indie pro wrestling channel in the world. Get over 6,000 hours of the best events from over 150 of your favorite promotions from 20 different countries around the globe. Brands like Progress Wrestling, Evolve Wrestling, Combat Zone, Defy, PCW Ultra, PWX, Over the Top, Shine, and hundreds of others with fresh content added every day for only $5.99 per month. Get your free trial today at powerslam.tv.
Go to powerslam.tv, promo code CHAIRSHOT. Get your free month. Again, that's powerslam.tv, promo code CHAIRSHOT.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Let's see here. Next segment, we got Sonny joining Vince and King at ringside for the Body Donnas versus the Brooklyn Brawler and Jerry Fox. I don't remember Jerry Fox at all.
Nope.
How dare you forget Jerry Fox?
I can only like audibly imagine 50,000 real football fans chanting "Who are ya" at Jerry Fox. This match happened. It was fine. I was more impressed by Sonny on commentary, if I'm being perfectly honest with you guys. We'll go in reverse this time. Mags, what did you think of the match?
Yeah, it was less than 4 minutes long. It was all to further the storyline between Sonny and the Body Donnas and the Smoking Guns. Sonny is so charismatic, and she revealed something in commentary that I didn't actually know. She was only 23 years old. Mm. That is mental that she had such a mind for promoting herself and a great mind for being this huge star in wrestling at such a young age. We got cloudy again, the sunny kind of a parody, and we mentioned on last week's episode that nobody really knew who this person was. So I actually went and tried to find out, and it was actually a wrestler called, let me find his name. I think it's something like Johnny Shoulders.
Yeah, it's like Shoulders something or other.
Handsome Jimmy Shoulders.
There you go.
And he was actually a friend of Chris Candido. Obviously, Chris Candido in real life was the partner of Sunny, and when she was being moved away from him, WWF brought his friend in just to keep him happy, I suppose, because he wasn't happy about Sunny being moved on. But the fact is, she was the star of the show, as much as good of a wrestler Chris was. She was the moneymaker. So Jimmy was brought in to kind of placate Chris and keep him happy. But yeah, that this match happened, the two jobbers get a whooping. I suppose, I mean, the Super Hurricane Rana looked cool. But this was all about the Sunny versus Cloudy kind of storyline.
Mm. Very, very well said, Mags. I'll kick it over to Ori now. Ori, thoughts on the match? And I'll give you a little bit of a bonus here. Last week we talked a little bit about maybe Cloudy being a somewhat problematic character. Maybe, obviously that gimmick continues here because it's only 24 hours after the last show that we reviewed. Believe it or not. I mean, are we still feeling that way about Cloudy here, or is there any comedic relief here? Because she did chase off Sunny at the very end.
I don't know. Like, I get the comedic aspect of it. Just,
yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it in particular. I agree with Mags that Sunny is completely dynamic in commentary. I think she did, you know, her job and did it impeccably. Mm. The thing that got me at the very beginning as the Body Donnas are coming out is that I swore I saw empty seats.
Mm.
And that struck me as interesting because facing, you know, showing any camera with empty seats, you know, the E would never allow it. And then part of it was also I kept thinking I was seeing empty seats, when in reality, what I was seeing was the stairs and how wide and how white they were. And so I think in one section, I did see some empty seats, you know, near the entrance area. But I think for the most part, what I was seeing initially and thinking was empty seats. What were those stairs? Because they stuck out like a sore thumb. I don't know why stuff like that sticks out to me. Hmm. Maybe just knowing now that we've had the curtain pulled back, so to speak, with the internet and different things and hearing stories of, you know, the E upgrading people's seats, you know, early mm-hmm. in the show, you know, during dark matches so that there would not be empty seats on camera. Mm-hmm. I guess some of that just kind of sticks with me like, oh, Vince let empty seats happen? How dare he? You know? Like it just kind of threw me off. I mean, it was a decent match. You know, in and of itself, it was okay. It was about 10 minutes, give or take. Mm-hmm. There was nothing really special about it to me other than Sonny's commentating. And I agree, it was to further the whole Body Donna's Sunny storyline and to have, you know, Cloudy chase her out. So, God, they could have come up with a better name for it, for him, her, them.
Cloudy.
I'm trying not to come off sounding transphobic because I'm really not, but I get that it's a gag and it's just, it's messing with my head. I don't like it.
I completely understand. Cloudy is Cloudy. I mean, what else can we
everything
say?
Everything and be like, listen, I have transphobic people that I have, not transphobic people, but trans people that I know and absolutely love. Like, I don't understand it. It's not part of me, but I respect that. But trying to trying to describe this in a way that doesn't sound transphobic because of a gag that they're doing. I think this is another thing that, you know, kind of like the, like I said last episode about the Austin 316 would never work because of the Bible thumpers nowadays. This specific thing would likely never work. This whole cross-dressing to make a sunny, a cloudy and all this stuff, it would never work in today's day and age. It would... Oh, God, it would be plastered.
I would agree with you here, even more so, actually, than I would about the Austin 316 thing. I don't think...
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
I mean, we did see we did see Santina Marella win a women's Royal Rumble not too long ago. But again, I think this is one of those things that would certainly not fly.
But in the same very token, well today. As far as Santina, we knew it was Santino. There was no trying to, oh, this is just a buff woman that we're spoofing with Sonny.
Right.
Like, I mean, and everybody knows that it's not really a buff woman. It's a dude in drag.
Right.
But like, we got that it was Santino trying to make some type of mark on the WWE because he was unable to do it anywhere else, you know, and just trying to find a place. We all knew.
Right.
You know,
we had no idea who Jimmy Shoulders even was. We just knew Cloudy at this point.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
I'm sorry, Ori.
It's okay.
I'll give you a better one here. In the next segment, we have Vader, Owen Hart, and Davey Boy Smith taking on us. I think I have this right here. Savio Vega.
If you don't, I do.
Aldo Montoya and Barry Horowitz. We had Jim Cornette on commentary. He was talking about how good of a stable he had put together there with the three men in the ring. Vince tells us at the next pay-per-view, International Incident, that it will be main evented with Hart, Vader, and Smith facing Shawn Michaels, Ahmed Johnson, and the Ultimate Warrior. Owen Hart does get the submission victory here with the sharpshooter. Like I said, I'm going to throw this to you here, Ori, because again, this is kind of a one of those really interesting differences between modern wrestling and the wrestling that we see of this time here in 1996. Owen Hart applies the sharpshooter and Montoya just starts tapping out like just maybe a few seconds after applying the submission. Savio Vega and Barry Horowitz are just left stranded on the apron. Did this shock you that they didn't even attempt to come in and break it up?
A little bit. I'm not going to lie. Like, I guess I'm, and it could be, I guess, in some ways, just the, cause I don't, all right, I'm going to throw this out there. Do with it with what you will. I've gotten so used to watching AEW and seeing these fully formed tag teams and people who have respect or even agreeable disrespect with one another that we're not gonna lose no matter what. I don't care if I hate your guts, you know. Yeah. So I don't know what type of cohesion there would have been for a backstory between Horowitz, Savio Vega, and Aldo Montoya. So it kind of, to some degree, for me, seemed like a hodgepodge team of jobbers that they just threw together to make Camp Cornette look good, which it may very well have been. So it's like, well, we don't have any loyalty to him. Why should we jump in and help? So I don't know where the play was that, you know, they wouldn't run in and at least attempt to interfere and have Vader and Bulldog, you know, hold them back or, intervene to keep them from letting them interfere or what have you. I don't know. I just. It was a squash match. That's how it felt. It was a freaking squash match. That's what it was. And it caught me. I don't know why, but I have this note. It caught me funny that they were trying so hard to be relevant that Cornette throws in this line about, I believe, Vader being the real human eraser. And I was like, what? And then it kind of hit me. That was when Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jamie Lee Curtis came out with the movie Eraser, which I absolutely love. And so I was like, man. And I'll be honest with you, the only person on the opposing team from Camp Cornette that really looked really good to me was Savio Vega. I was super, and correct me if I'm wrong, didn't he eventually become the Godfather?
No, that's right.
No? No. Okay.
He's a big deal. Yeah. He's a big deal in wrestling, though.
I knew he was. But angles and the way he looked at that time, it looked like he almost looked like Godfather.
If I'm not mistaken, I think Savio Vega was with so he was part of that clique backstage with The Undertaker and Rikishi and Yokozuna and the Godfather. They were all part of a backstage clique called the Bone Street Crew.
Yeah.
They weren't really like the clique, like Shawn Michaels and Kevin Nash, and they're more like friendly drinking buddies.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah. But Savio was amazing. I thought he actually stood out more to me in the match than even Camp Cornette and Jim Cornette running his mouth, you know, which he's always great at, you know. Mm-hmm. Nobody believes their own hype more than Jim Cornette, let's be honest.
That thunder.
Sorry, we mentioned The Undertaker and it brought the thunder. If the lights go out, then I'll get concerned.
we'll have more Undertaker chat here in just a moment. I can promise you that. Ori, I'll get to Mags here in just a second, but I want to know quickly your thoughts here on how Vader, Hart, and Smith came across as a cohesive unit. Because again, we only saw the last little bit of them as a unit at the very end of King of the Ring '96. Even though this is a squash match, how did this come across to you?
In some ways it was convincing and in some ways it wasn't. And you know what I mean? Like Hart and Davey Boy, I know the history there and can see the connection. Vader is obviously, you know, Cornette's recruited them all and brought them all in under his tennis racket. And he's legitimately brought in Vader to be the big monster bad guy of the crew, even though, British Bulldog, Davey Boy Smith, is a monster of a man in and of himself. So it's like it's the extra brawn to back up the brawn, you know. And so I think in some ways it worked. It was okay. In some ways, I'm not completely convinced. They're united under a single tennis racket, and there's not a whole lot of cohesive loyalty, we'll put it that way, to me.
Hey, that makes total sense to me. Mags, I'll kick it over to you now. Owen Hart finishing the match here with the sharpshooter, Bret Hart's younger brother, winning with that very famous maneuver. Could you maybe tell me, and I know I haven't given you any context or time to actually look this up, but where was Bret Hart at this time? Because there were several shouts. King was talking about Bret Hart. King was like, oh, well, that's not really his move. I think that was the words that he used. Or no.
He invented that.
Yeah. King said Owen Hart invented the sharpshooter.
I think it was Cornette.
Oh, was it Cornette that said it?
It was Cornette that said it. He invented that move. He made that move. Something is dinging in my head that it was Cornette, because I think I remember them flashing over to him.
Okay. But yeah, I guess I'm just like trying to get historical context, because again, this time is a little bit fuzzy for me. I do remember a lot of it, but contextually, it is rather interesting that we're seeing more of Owen here than we are of Bret. I think that there was a period of time where maybe he took a year off. Maybe this is the same one. I'm not 100% sure.
Okay, so in the build-up to King of the Ring, we'd had WrestleMania, and that's where Bret had lost the title to Shawn Michaels in the Iron Man match that went 0-0, and then it had to have the overtime. And Bret took a little bit of time off. I think he ends up re-signing a new deal in around October, so we'll see him come back then, building up to the SummerSlam. But yeah, pretty much he was taking a hiatus because he'd lost the title, and they were in discussions for him to sign a new contract.
Mm. What's the feeling like seeing, I guess, more of Owen here? I guess Owen's in a more prominent spot here, obviously than maybe what he would have had otherwise with Bret, which to me always came across, and maybe this is just my weird thinking, but it always came across as though when Bret was around, Owen always felt a little bit diminished because of like the whole, like, oh, Owen's the younger brother, and you know, they had their own feud and everything here. How is Owen coming across to you here, Mags? Cause I'm really actually enjoying more of this Owen Hart, from between last week's episode and this week's episode.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think Owen has got way more charisma than his older brother. I think he plays a better heel. And he's very much that kind of like smarmy, underhanded. And also in times that kind of chicken shit heel, he's really good at getting that kind of that heat from a crowd. I feel that he's just so good at playing that heel role, something that Bret, I don't think was as good at, because Bret, as much of an amazingly technical wrestler he was, he did kind of believe his own hype a lot. He felt that maybe perhaps wrestling was real to him almost. If you remember the Wrestling with Shadows documentary, he kind of says that he didn't want to diminish his character in a lot of the ways that WWF wanted to book him, because he believed in his own heart. Whereas Owen, I feel, was just a better character wrestler, and in ring he was no slouch at all. He was whilst he was maybe not as technically gifted as Bret, he was certainly able to hold his own with pretty much anyone in the company, and it just makes you think, if he didn't tragically lose his life, what could he have achieved in that company? He could have easily been multi-time world champion, and he would have looked legitimate in that role, because let's not forget, at WrestleMania 10, he beat his own brother. And his brother then went on to win the title at the end of the show. So he was definitely had the wrestling chops. And like I said, with Bret kind of out of the picture, it was perhaps his time to shine. And yeah, I do agree with you that when Bret comes back, he becomes the focal point. And it does mean that Owen kind of has to go back into the shadows almost. And I bet that was hard for him personally to always be that kind of like second man almost. But yeah, I really, really enjoyed Owen. I felt that maybe if they'd have shaved a little bit more off the first match, they could have added it to this one and we could have seen more of that that Owen character playoff, because this was essentially Bulldog and Vader beating up some people and then Owen coming in for the smarmy sharpshooter finish. But how can we go past this match and not talk about the jock strap that Aldo Montoya wore?
Well, go on then.
Are you talking about on his face, on his head?
You can't just drop that bombshell without the...
So for context, for people who don't know, Aldo Montoya ends up being just incredible from ECW and then WECW later on. But this gimmick was meant to be, and Tanner, we cover football on Radio Techers. He was meant to be a Portuguese footballer. Now, how many matches would you say we've covered on Techers? Maybe 30 matches or so over the time. Have you ever seen anybody wear a jock strap on their head whilst playing football? No, it just doesn't make a lick of sense. I don't know what.
Maybe twice.
Whenever Petacek's playing, I suppose.
I have only seen football in changing channels, and even I have never seen that.
It's very rare.
I don't know. I would have seen football before. I don't know what channel. I mean, maybe he's on ESPN The Ocho. I have no idea. But yeah, it was very weird. But he ended up tapping, and I don't know how it is on Peacock, obviously, because you've switched over from the network to Peacock now over at your side of the pond. But here in the UK, for this match, they had that Savio Vega teams up with Aldo Montoya and the Brooklyn Brawler. But yeah, this was poor. What a way to disrespect the name of Barry Horowitz. How dare they not mention that it's Barry Horowitz and not the Brooklyn Brawler? Yeah, disgusting.
What?
Yeah, it really, really does.
That's what it says on is it in the captions?
On the match description. It says, newly crowned King of the Ring, Stone Cold Steve Austin faces the Undertaker. Savio Vega teams up with Aldo Montoya and the Brooklyn Brawler to take on three of Jim Cornette's finest. Plus, Ahmed Johnson battles Hunter Helmsley. Brian Pillman continues to cause controversy and much, much more. Well, not really much, much more. That's pretty much everything that happened on the show.
See, I'm looking this up because now I'm concerned. Now I have questions. I have questions. Load. App won't load. Figures. I'll get it in a minute. Because now I'm curious.
Well, I will eagerly await your questions here. As we draw here to our main event, we actually get Brian Pillman come down to the ring. And he threatens Vince McMahon, saying that he hasn't gotten paid in the week that he's been in WWE.
This is brilliant.
It's really great stuff.
It really was. And to me, it was like foreshadowing.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. You can tell that Pillman is playing a very manic type character here.
Yeah.
And very fitting considering that the new Dark Side of the Ring series is about to kick off here. As of the time of this recording, at least, you guys are going to be listening to this in the future, so you've probably already seen the episode by the time that this one that you're listening to this. Yeah, cool deal. Brian Pillman's out there. We get,
I mean, what actually was the best thing about this promo for me was how uncomfortable Brian made Vince feel.
You can
tell that Brian is not the guy that reads off a script. He goes out and he basically says whatever comes off the top of the head. But you could see Vince almost cringing that. Is he going to reveal that I'm the owner? Because we didn't really know of Vince McMahon, the owner. We knew of Vince McMahon, the commentator. Mm-hmm. It's not until later on when we get the whole kind of like Stone Cold and the screw job and the promo where Vince says we're sick of that insulting fans' intelligence. As of now, we still know Vince as just the lead commentator. So you can see Vince like panicking that Brian's is gonna call me the boss, or he's gonna say, Vince, write me my checkout and stuff like that. And so it was cool to see Vince put in that position where he was absolutely flapping over what Brian could potentially say.
Oh, it was great. And the manic look in Pillman's eyes, like, I'm enjoying this so much. I'm
and then
savoring
he
it.
Cash as well. That was the best thing. He went, where's my cash? Like, he doesn't get paid by check or bank transfer. He wants it in notes.
and poor McMahon, I kind of felt bad for him a little bit, because he's like, well, you kind of got to get in the ring. And Pillman's like, where's my money? And just so you know, on Peacock, all it says for a description is Ahmed Johnson versus Hunter Hearst Helmsley. That's it. There's no full description, anything like that. And like even the one for next week, it's just got one match, and more than likely that's the opening match or the headliner match, and that's it. So, and that seems to be par for the course for like just scrolling through the episodes coming up. That's pretty much it.
Just gives you the one big match.
Right. Yeah, right. Okay. And then there's one for like August 16th of 96, the superstars of the WWE, which of course it wasn't at that time, but anyway, square off in the ring and behind the scenes. Like that's it.
The most generic,
like
description they could come up with.
Exactly.
Wow. Well, then, I don't know what to make of that. That is a very strange.
I will say, pre the Pillman interaction, they did pan to Austin with that busted and stitched up lip and that sneer on his face, and that was just a really good shot.
Yeah, and again, like we mentioned last week, hinting at the link between Austin and Pillman without mentioning the fact that they had history.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And the other thing, too, is they had Stone Cold there juxtaposition with Pillman, who was just so, again, I'll use the word manic looking. Mm-hmm. You know, he looked irate, whereas Austin was kind of just leaning against the turnbuckle. I mean, he looked pretty smug. He looked pretty
smarmy.
Intense. Smarmy.
Smarmy.
So would you, if you were the king of that ring, you'd look smug.
Yeah, I mean, undoubtedly, yes. But there was a cool contrast between how Austin, the vibe that Austin gave off, as opposed to Pillman. And we did see that small little interaction between the two at King of the Ring. Maybe some future foreshadowing.
Perhaps.
I love foreshadowing. I don't know why. It makes me happy.
We are at our main event, The Undertaker taking on Stone Cold Steve Austin. This was a decent enough main event, I guess, one with two big names that would leave the crowd going home happy to see these two men have a match. We did get a little bit of a gold dust interference here, which ended up being a victory in favor of The Undertaker. He didn't really help Stone Cold. He just Cold Dust had his own agenda, it seems. this match was fine. It was fine. Mags, maybe you have more to say about this match than I did. I thought it was just fine.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong, really. It was actually an interesting match for Stone Cold to have coming off his victory from the King of the Ring, going up against someone with the legacy of Undertaker who had just had a loss to Mankind. You were kind of like, which way are they going to go with this? Are they going to have Undertaker lose two matches in a row? And this was way before he had this kind of like aura of being bulletproof almost. Could that have really kind of affected his momentum? Or do you have Austin lose, which kind of like nullifies the fact that he's just won King of the Ring? But obviously, we get the Goldust interference, which adds to the coming up storyline between Undertaker and Goldust. Austin still looks strong afterwards. It was a very kind of slow match between these two guys. Something obviously we'll see going further and further down the course of this journey. They have way better matches, more exciting, intense matches than this. I think this was just more of Austin still growing into his Stone Cold character, still kind of like learning the nuances of what Stone Cold was to become. It was a very fine main event. Quite short. What did he go? About 10 minutes maybe? And then... pretty much ends the Raw on a DQ with Undertaker having a face full of gold dust from gold dust and it all over Austin's back, which was a cool visual for someone who's like in terms of ring gear very bland with black boots, black spandex and then gold dust all over his back. It was a cool way to end the show. Gets you hyped up for what's coming up between Undertaker and Goldust. And then we get the little promo at the end with Shawn Michaels battling his former partner, Marty Jannetty.
Yes, we did get the Shawn Michaels, Marty Jannetty. And this would not be the first nor the last time that we would see Marty Jannetty and Shawn Michaels paired up on a Raw match. Ori, I'll throw it over to you. Your thoughts on the match and even more so, your thoughts on Goldust's very peculiar, stalking of The Undertaker? Because, I mean, he didn't really like... didn't do a whole lot offensively to The Undertaker, it seems.
No, but I mean, I get where they're coming from with it. It's shades of things that we've seen in Japan with, you know, the powder, things we see later with the green mist from, oh God, I can see his face. Thank you, Tajiri. You know, or even Muda, things of that nature. He just hit him with a glitter bomb and was like, poof, you've been glittered, goodbye. You know, and I think there was more stalking by the King on Paul Bearer than there was on Goldust and Taker. Mm-hmm. You know, hopping up from the commentating table mid-match to chase him down with a microphone. You know, like... Yeah. And Paul's just refusing to talk to him, just keeps turning, and he's, you're ashen and blah, 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 and throwing insults at him, trying to get some type of reaction and whatnot. And, you know, I don't know. It was a decent match. I'll give it that. Mm. It left both competitors looking strong going into their next thing. But it's funny that you mention... Austin with the glitter on his back and everything, because it threw back to something that I caught in differences then and now from King of the Ring last week, because they had Goldust make his entrance and there was gold glitter everywhere that came down and they didn't even try to clean that up at any given point. There was giant gold discs on everybody throughout the rest of the show. And I think oddly enough, like, I appreciate that they clean that shit up between matches nowadays. Like, for me, I don't know, maybe I'm just a little ADHD. I really want to, like, hang on, time out. Let me get this off. This is super freaking distracting. Oh my God. You know?
For
like
sure.
For the end of the show, seeing the mask of gold on Undertaker's face was a really cool visual in and of itself. But for King of the Ring to go throughout the rest of the show and see Shawn Michaels and Davey Boy Smith covered in giant gold glitter discs from shit that happened like 20 minutes ago, 30 minutes ago, was really distracting. So I don't know. It was just a weird thing that kind of stuck in my head. But overall, it was a good match.
It was also really interesting seeing a really shiny Undertaker.
Yeah. I thought
that was just odd. That's
probably the only time in his life he shimmered like that, even with his current wife. You know, like I just don't. Undertaker doesn't strike me as the type of guy who'd be like, yeah, just a little glitter, just a little. Pretty, like the shiniest he gets is from his baby oil. That's it.
There you go, like a Twilight character in the sun.
Still a better love story than Twilight.
Well, there you go. We'll close out the show review with one more Monday night highlight here. This will be, again, notable part of this particular segment of the show. Mags, I'll start with you. What is your Monday night highlight for this particular closing segment?
For me, it's the throwing of the gold dust. I like the way that gold dust has these little kind of nuances to his character. Obviously, playing off the gold with having the gold title, and then obviously throwing instead of just normal kind of chalk dust, he throws gold dust into Undertaker's face, and that visual of a Stone Cold with a gold strap down his back is really cool. So yeah, I think it's the throwing of the gold dust for me.
There you go. Ori, your Monday night highlight for this segment.
So mine actually was a commercial segment prior to the match, oddly enough.
Is it the Ultimate Warrior one?
Yes.
Oh, it was
okay.
Oh,
me, or did that gentleman look like Chris Masters?
Yes, he
ever
did
so slightly.
Bit.
He looked like bit. He could be Chris Masters' like older brother or something. And it just—I don't know why it struck me and stood out so much, but it did. It was really, really weird.
Yeah, I thought it was hilarious how they kind of like push for disabled people can do anything, which is absolutely true. But then a few years down the line, they have a wrestler called Zach Gowen who they push down a flight of stairs in a wheelchair and basically cripple him. A little bit of a dichotomy there with the WWF.
And not disagree. I liked Zach Gowen. I thought he was a phenomenal wrestler. But yeah, there's a lot of irony in all of that.
Yes.
I'm going to go with, for my Monday night highlight, I'm not sure if you guys noticed this one here, but there was also another commercial segment for something that they were calling the Attitude Adjustment Tour, which I was like, huh, that's interesting. And then I was waiting and waiting, but no John Cena. He could not be seen in this particular.
Maybe he was there and maybe you just never noticed it.
Yeah, perhaps so.
It could have been his head being electrocuted by the ropes.
It could have been.
Possibly.
Maybe he was powering the electrocution and that's why you couldn't see him. I thought it stood out to me and was funny to me because, like, isn't that one of the names that we workshopped for this podcast? You know, that's why it caught me.
It's almost like we planned it.
Really weird.
That just about covers Raw. Nothing else happened after this. It's only an hour long, less than an hour long. So you could really watch this episode and, you don't just like get some chores done while you're at home. I don't know. Get done with it and not be completely bored out of your skull.
Maybe that first match. I caught myself drifting. I'm not even going to lie. There were moments in some of these matches that I caught myself, you know, checking my phone going, I ain't going to miss much. And the sad thing is that watching Monday Night Raw, and I will say, I will disclaimer it, pre-pandemic, I felt myself doing the same thing.
Fair enough. You have any final thoughts here for this particular show, Ori?
No. I'm thought it out. I've thought all the things I can think. It's all of the notes that I have, I think. I'm a note person because I forget things really, really easy.
Yeah, I had to take notes on this one here as well because I wanted to make sure I got it as right as possible here.
The old ass slam of the week.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think they had done it that far back. I thought it was a gimmick they had started with Snickers or something.
It was a botch as well. Kind of like flip powerbomb, and Marty Jannetty lets him go. Yeah. So how is the slam of the week a botch? That's unreal.
I don't know. Mags, your final thoughts of the show?
Yeah, it was certainly a missable show. The only real reason to watch is to further the storylines that are clearly going to be coming up in the next couple of pay-per-views. So Ahmed Johnson looked strong as the Intercontinental Champion. The storyline got moved on with Cloudy and Sunny. Owen, Davey Boy and Vader looked like monsters. And then obviously we got the Gold Dust attacking the Undertaker for that storyline. So it essentially did what it needed to do in terms of furthering storylines. But as an entertainment show, it was still stuck in the kind of like that void between the kind of like a new generation era and going into what would eventually become the Attitude Era. So it's kind of like a lost episode almost.
Hmm. I think that covers everything. We'll go on the round here. Hori, where can people find more of your content?
You can find me on Twitter at Oriona75, Oriona75. Or you can catch me on Twitch every Monday and Friday evening at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time playing all kinds of games. Right now we're going through Monster Hunter World and I'm trying not to throw a controller because it's driving me crazy. So, yeah. And that's going to be that handle's a little bit different. Oriona7. No 5. Still working on that. Still trying to figure it out. I don't think anybody has it claimed, so I'm going to keep trying every day to change it until we can finally get it.
You definitely should. So make sure to check out Ori hunting some monsters.
Yes. And what about you, Mags?
Okay, so you can find me on the only social media I do, Twitter, at DAJ Kirtner. But you can also hear my voice on every other podcast that you've ever listened to because I am a podcast whore.
Well, there you go.
He's everywhere.
you can find me once again on Twitter at TexasGentleman_, where I sometimes tweet from that account. It's fine. You can just follow me there, and I'll follow you back. It'd be like a free follow on Twitter that you can get just by sending me a follow. You can also catch Mags and I on Radio Techers mostly every weekend, along with our good buddy Matt. We talk about some proper football, some Premier League football. The season's winding down, so now is the time to get in right before we start our coverage of the Euros. So that'll be a lot of fun this summer. Radio Techers, RadioTekkers, if you want to follow that show as well. Other than that, that's it for today's show, everybody. I hope you guys have had fun. I know we've had a lot of fun sitting here and chatting about this episode of Raw. And, of course, you're listening to this on the Chairshot Radio Network, so make sure to continue listening, continue subscribing, and, of course, always use your head.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Say goodbye
to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.